Welcome to Voices from the Bench, a dental laboratory podcast. Send us an email at info@voicesfromthebench.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Greetings and welcome to episode 277 of Voices from the Bench. My name is Elvis.
And my name is Travel.
Yeah, no kidding, Barb. Let's see. Last week was Oregon. Now you're coming to us from Chicago.
Yeah.
And next week we're in Chattanooga.
Right on.
What the hell's going on?
It's a very busy July. This is our CalLab meeting, and you know how much I love our CalLab board meetings. And Chicago, so I get to stare at the lake that I'm going to be swimming in. So yeah, all good.
Yeah, that's Chicago a couple times this year, huh?
You know it. Yeah, it's kind of inspirational though, because I look out at the water and I'm like, all right, you got 5 weeks. You keep swimming.
Yeah.
So. And how are you?
I'm doing well, doing real well. I am also training. I'm running as often as I usually do.
Beautiful. And,
things are going good.
All right.
Yeah, so CalLab planning this far in advance. It's good to hear.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully great topics are being discussed.
Oh, God.
Great meeting last year. Can't
yep.
wait. Or I guess this year. Great meeting this year. Can't wait for next year's. This is Barb recording in the hallway of a hotel.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's all good.
All right.
This is what we do to make this work every week.
Yeah, we do what we have to do, Elvis. Sorry yeah. if you guys hear an elevator in the background. So anyhow, let's go.
Yeah, so like we mentioned, this weekend we're going to be in Chattanooga at the Ladies of the Mill Summit.
Yay.
So by this point, we probably are not going to convince anyone who isn't already registered to go. But in case we change your minds, you can still register. I think you can register at the event. So, and if you are going, be sure to come by and say hi to us. And of course, sit down and record, because that's why we're going, to capture some great interviews, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait. See you there.
Yep. And we are going to be recording on stage in front of an audience, and that will be recorded. And then we're going to release it, hopefully, a few weeks later. So, I don't know, edited, unedited. So, we'll just see how it goes and look for that coming out on a future episode.
So, last week's episode was all about the Race for the Future 9.0 and the Foundation for Dental Lab Technology. But just because we talked about it last week doesn't mean that you still can't donate to this wonderful cause. In case you missed it, Elvis and I are participating in the Chicago Triathlon. It's on August 27th. I'm training my ass off, doing the race by myself. And Elvis is on a wonderful team with Mark Williamson and Bobby Kenny. Of course, we do it to raise money for the FDLT. So head over to dentallabfoundation.org. Click the Donate Now button and then select Race for the Future and then select me. Or, just saying, you can type in either Elvis and his team, the Abutments, and of course, I'm Barbara Warner. Or you can just do Voices from the Bench.
It's a nice, friendly, competitive way to see who can raise the most money.
Yeah, I haven't really even started raising money yet, but when I get back next week, I'm going to start sending out some emails because you know, it's a great event and a great way to raise money for our industry. So
what are you going to do? A cook-off this year? The car wash?
I don't know.
Garage sale?
Probably all of the above.
Metal detector on the beach? I mean, you'll do it all.
Yeah.
But just remember, even though we're competitively raising money, it all goes back to the industry that's given us so freaking much.
Correct.
So this week we're going to go back to the LMT Lab Day West. Back in May, our good friends at Ivoclar invited us to set up and chat with so many amazing people in our industry that might not make it to Chicago, where we usually record every year. So the first guest we talked to is one of the coolest people I had the opportunity to work with when I was at Preet. Amber Rodriguez came to Preet with pretty much no experience of implants or attachments. After a brief time in shipping and then customer service, she found that she had the gift of implant knowledge and technical support. Now labs and clinics around the nation rely on her to help with all things implants. She talks about Preet, identifying implants, old implants, And this was the first time for her to be speaking at a dental show.
And she kicked butt, just saying.
She did. And then we got a visit from some true legends in our industry.
Big time.
Until I heard their story, I had no idea two people could change so much in our industry long before technology ruled the lab space. Judy Fishman personally brought us Robert and Ardith Berger to record. You see, Robert is a technician that wanted a better tool for building crowns. Handcrafting one and taking it to a show started them on a journey with their company called Belle de St. Clair.
Belle de St. Clair.
Belle de St. Clair. They talk about the early days, inventing so many amazing and wonderful things that grew our industry, hitting the trade show circuit, and building the business to over 500 products and 21 patents. It's truly amazing what we have to thank these two for and all that they did. So join us as we chat with Amber Rodriguez and Ardith and Robert Berger.
Did you know that not all zirconia is the same?
Zircad Prime Zirconia from Ivoclar is uniquely produced with gradient technology, which allows two powders that normally center at different intervals to be combined into one material which centers uniformly.
The manufacturing process not only optimizes the translucent properties, but it also creates a seamless progression of shade while maintaining optimal strength.
Zircad Prime is now more affordable than ever and will give you the results your dentist will notice. I've seen it. It's true. Contact your local Ivoclar sales representative today to find out more about Prime and how Ivoclar can support your success.
Tell them you heard it on the podcast and get a free Prime disc to try. Just use promo code 723.
And as always, we appreciate your support of the podcast, Ivoclar. Voices from the Bench. The Interview.
That was perfect.
Say it again. No, I'm just kidding.
That's awesome.
Barb, we have someone with us here at Lab Day West that actually worked with me.
Oh, damn. For which company?
I haven't been with that many.
That's stuck with Elvis.
Good old Preet.
Oh. Heck yeah.
Amber.
You're going to introduce her?
Rodriguez.
Oh, you don't even know my last name?
No, he's really bad with names.
It is. A Rodriguez with a Z, not an S.
Okay, nice. So I was close.
Yeah, you were close. You win. I give that to you.
Let me tell you about Amber. This is how I know.
You're telling everybody about Amber. Just saying.
I am. So I started working for Preet, and I got to go to the headquarters every now and again, you know, here in sunny California. And here is this lady who's never worked in a lab, that's never really done any of this stuff, that has the most amazing knowledge of implant components.
Oh, that's a lot of knowledge. And I'm still baffled
by how you know all this. So, Amber, tell us your role at Preet, and what were you doing before?
Oh, man.
How did you find Preet,
basically? Yeah, I mean, right? Yeah, how does one end up with such implant knowledge without ever really doing implants?
You know what? Man, Chris and Ruben, they really, like, they nail it into you.
Yeah.
They're like, you have to know this stuff. And if you don't, like, you're out of luck. Like, you have to.
Yeah.
Especially, like, moving in. So I started in the warehouse. I was just telling in my lecture, actually, that my interview was...
You're a speaker now, too.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. For you. Yeah. No fear there. That's awesome.
Oh, my God. No, I was...
No, I know. I was being a smart ass.
Man, trust dude.
It doesn't get easier.
So you're in the warehouse.
Yeah. So I was in the warehouse for about 4 months or so. And then Nikki's like, okay, time to pick up the phone. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, she's like, just pick it up. You can do it. And I'm like, okay. So I pick it up, and they're like, I need an engaging cylinder. I'm like, well, what does that mean? You know, I'm lost.
So she wanted you to pick up the phone to call or to talk to clients that were calling in asking questions?
Yeah. Customer
That's
service.
A little bit of trial
They wanted
fire.
To place an order.
Jeez.
Yeah, okay. She's like, you can do it. Like, just pick it up. You got this. It's busy. There's no one else that can answer the phone. Do it. So I'm like, okay, I got it. I pick up the phone. Don't know anything. Have to put them on hold. Well, then I move into customer service. Moving into customer service, and it's A little bit of a bumpy ride, but I figured it out. I'm studying my, you know,
they have a catalog.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I can memorize these numbers. I don't know what the hell they do, but I'm going to memorize all these numbers and all the verbiage, and I'm going to just wing it.
So I imagine a lot of people call and say, I need this part number, and you're like, that's easy to do. But you must get those.
That.
Yeah, you must get those calls that are like, I have this patient with this case and this angle of this implant, and what do you recommend?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Honestly, if they call and they're like, I don't know what I have, but can you send me the parts? I'm like, I need an x-ray. Please send me the x-ray. I'll do my best. We'll get you what implant it is, and then we'll go from there. But it sucks sometimes. People are like, hey, I need the parts. Just send them. I'm like, what do you mean you need the parts? Just send them. We really need to, you know, lock it down, see what you have. But, yeah, so I was in customer service for a couple years, and finally a position opened up in technical, and Ruben asked me if I wanted it, and I was like, no.
Really?
Well, define technical for me.
So being in technical service is for Preet is, you know, case planning and stuff like that, and identifying implants and attachments. So
that's way out of my league.
Yeah, and I could identify a few here and there. We have a live chat service, and so an implant would pop out, I'd be like, hey, I think that's a strawman tissue level, the most, like, you know, distinct probably is. So I told Ruben no, but he was like, oh, I think you can do it. So I was like, all right, let's test it out. And I started in technical, and Ruben trained me extensively on identifying implants, and we would go through every single implant ID together, would work with him on it.
So when an ID came into Preet, Ruben would stop, grab you, and kind of go over why he thinks it's this and what characterizations he's looking at. And
yeah, essentially that was it. I mean, I would go through, you know, like the back of the Preet catalog has all those old implants. So I'd look at those for hours. I would go on what implant is that and just like study,
yeah,
like engrave it into my brain. And then eventually after a couple weeks, I was like, oh, I know what this is. And I would just have him approve it. Like, hey, this is what I think it is. And he'd be like, you're good to go. And then eventually he was like, don't send them to me anymore. You got it. And
nice.
So that's how that happened.
Wow. When you say study, you just keep going over it and
getting into like those implant catalogs and just studying the internal connection of the implants. Because sometimes we don't even get an x-ray. We just get a picture of, you know, the sulcus with an implant in there. And they're like, what is this? And luckily, if it's a trilobe, I'm like, oh,
yeah,
that's
a trilobe.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, you know, there's just so many different makes. So, yeah, just really getting into all the implant catalogs, like from the actual manufacturer and studying those.
Wow.
So what's your day now? You're not taking orders, are you?
You know what? I miss taking orders.
Do you?
I actually miss it because I mean, don't get me wrong, I love being in technical, but it's mostly email-based and live chat, and, like, I don't get to talk to my people, so everybody that I talked to before within the customer service role, like, I miss them.
You
like,
have relationships with
yeah,
them.
If I see the phone call and it's, like, Pan Am, I'm like, hey, it's Amber. Do you remember me? So I do take some orders, though, through the email. But my day-to-day, like, I've already answered probably, like, 50 emails this morning of implant IDs. We're backed up.
Wow.
Yeah.
50?
Yeah.
This morning?
For sure.
Wow.
In between lecturing.
You spoke twice.
Wow.
Your first time, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you like it? I know it was nerve-wracking, but did you, like, feel good about it after it's over?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it because it really gave me the opportunity to learn, like, what can I do better? Being that it's my first time, like, I knew it wasn't going to be perfect. I was like, I might suck. It might not go good at all.
It's always good to think that way. So when you don't suck, you're like, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't suck.
80% of it's just getting up there.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, once you just get up there, it's...
It takes balls.
Yeah. No, totally. It was honestly refreshing to be done and be like, wow, you know, like you didn't totally tank it. Like,
yeah.
It actually went
it's
well.
I was able to be coherent.
Oh, yeah. I'm
amazing.
Like, I'm flexing when I get out of there. I'm like, I did that. You
know? So when you lecture, so do you have, like, what do you talk about? So you're training people that are coming here to look at the Preet implants and, like, what?
More so, like, today I covered.
Yeah, obviously, because Preet doesn't make an implant, but okay.
It's okay. People still call. Like, I have a Preet implant. What is this? And I'm like, we don't manufacture implants. They're like, yes, you do. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But today I went over the digital workflow. So everything in the pre-choice library, what you can do in it, and how implementing a digital workflow can help your lab or your dental office. Because some people, you know, are, this is going to sound
clueless. Clueless.
You know, it's just digital can be super scary if you're if you don't know or you don't want to do it. You know, it just can be really intimidating. So being able to provide the education of like, hey, it's actually super simple and a lot easier than you think. Just giving that knowledge and being able to share that, because it is really intimidating, especially if you're, you know, designing and things like that. Like, I don't have a whole lot of experience in the design aspect of it, but I can teach you how to get there.
Yeah.
You know,
makes a lot of sense. So.
Do you find it hard that since you don't have the experience, it's hard to tell people how to do
yes.
it?
Yeah. Whenever somebody's like, can you remote in for me? I'm like, heck yeah, I can. And I'm like totally like pressing this button and that button. Like, I know what these do, you know? So I do. And when people allow me to remote in too, I'm also learning. Like, I'm teaching them and I'm also learning too. So it's really cool, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So how many implants do you think you identify a day? I mean, I know you said you did 50 this morning.
Dude, and it's weird because today's Friday and we never have that many implant IDs on a Friday.
What's going on?
Like, I don't
Is
know.
Is that Mercury?
Mercury
thing?
Retrograde, damn
that's,
it.
That's your
it's
excuse
over
for everything.
On Sunday, just saying.
Every
thank
bad
God.
Or good thing Barb blames
no,
on
bad.
A planet.
It's just
it's retrograde.
Thank you.
Dude, I feel it.
Thank you. See?
He's I had a couple of friends who were very, they'll tell me, like, are you feeling okay today? Because the stars aren't aligned. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you're right. I'm not feeling that great right now.
Not now.
Yeah. Totally. But, you know, I would do wish I had some more hands-on, like, in an actual lab or even just, like, designing. I actually know how to design bars better than I do anything else because
that's
I've trained
insane.
With Jeff.
Yeah.
You know, wow. So Jeff is awesome. He actually taught me a lot. I can design a hater bar and be like, whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But, some of the 3Shape and ExoCAD stuff, like, I'm still learning.
I'm amazed with you and everyone else at Preet, their knowledge when I got in and learned. A lot to say, you know, to Chris and Ruben for passing it on.
They really take the time. Honestly, they do, because I still feel like I'm asking them stupid questions, and they're like just open and just willing to teach me. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I got this.
Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely really, you know, they emphasize it and they want people to know. Like, I think that's a big thing too, is when people call Preet, they know like 9 out of 10 times someone's going to answer the phone and probably have the answer to their question.
Yeah.
And if they
super
don't,
important.
Like, we'll find it. You
yeah.
know? So they really, you know, they got that down.
How many calls are there SOL? Because the implant, just there's no parts for it. That's got to happen quite often.
Pretty rare. Like, today I had a Sargon implant. They're like, I need to restore
the Sargon?
Yeah, Sargon.
I've never even heard of that.
It's old. It's ancient. And
she's looking at us like, we're crazy. Like, you don't know this?
Yeah, I'm crazy. I don't know anything about implants. So
the apex of the implants, like, totally flared out. I don't
out?
Even know how you would remove. Yeah, outwards. So
that's pretty
yeah
odd.
Look it up, it's gnarly.
Yeah, I will. Interesting.
Yeah, so I had to let them down,
just like there's nothing weird.
I was like
yeah.
it's completely
invest
discontinued
in a new one.
Yeah, and I don't even know, like, I feel like that would be really hard and painful to remove because the apex is flared.
That
like
would,
it's,
you would
it's
think.
Literally flared, like it's weird. So yeah, I don't have to tell people that too often, but there is those implants that are just completely discontinued. There's nothing for
sucks.
Wow.
And what about the ones that Preet doesn't restore?
Do you
send them to other places?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we can't restore and I know where they can go, I'll tell them. Like, for all the like old Calcitech implants, we have a contact. His name is JC at Root Dental Lab. I believe he got like an influx of old parts from maybe Attachments International. Not too sure. I don't know.
Randy
really.
Root's been that lab's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have a stock of something somewhere.
So they have a ton of old parts. So I'll definitely send them there all the time. And if he doesn't, or if they're like, oh, you know, we don't know where to go, I'll refer Titan sometimes because I know they have like some Calcitech parts.
IMZ, they had some parts.
IMZ,
for
those
out on me again.
Yeah, sorry, Barb.
I'm sorry, but I love it, but I don't know the language, the lingo. You guys just keep going.
All those old implants.
That's great. You spoke. You ready for the next one?
You know what? I'll be ready once I go back and add in all my bullet points of the things that I want to work on, because I had a really good time, and like I said, it went better than I thought it was going to go, but now I feel like I'm taking notes, like, oh, I could have said this, or I should have said that, and oh, I could talk about this in there and really add this in, because I kind of felt like a salesperson, and like, that's just not me, like, I just...
But I think that's a really smart way of looking at it. Like, how can I improve? Like, what would I want to say? What can I add? And I think that's how you get better at speaking.
I always went from, well, this slide to this slide didn't transition too well.
Exactly.
I need to get something else in there or rearrange it or something. But
that's
how I
felt today.
I don't think anybody does a presentation and doesn't change it for
the next
one.
Yeah, doesn't tweak it.
Something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Changes by the next one.
No, I had a couple of random slides where I went over and I was like, damn,
why the hell did I put that there?
That didn't even work. Like, that's not even in the right flow.
It made sense when I was doing it in my the bathroom mirror.
Oh, gosh. I rehearsed last night. I would time myself. It was like 51 minutes. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. Today, both times, 45 minutes the first time, 40 the second. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And no one's going to be mad at me for taking 45
minutes.
So you
did it out loud in your room.
Oh, yeah, like a total nerd.
No,
yeah.
I do it, too.
I do it, too.
I try to hook up to the TV in the hotel room just so I have the big thing to project
on. Oh, yeah. No, totally. I set up my little phone. Yeah. I timed myself. I was like, okay. I was definitely nerding out.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Hey, whatever it takes to get out there.
Yes.
I was feeling really unprepared, and so I was like, I need to do this, because if I don't, I'm going to get up there and probably just faint, and then Ruben will have to take over for me.
I still feel like I'm going to faint. I swear to God, it doesn't get easier, but you do get more efficient. You figure things out, and it sounds like
I'm afraid
that.
To eat before.
Oh, same.
Oh, yeah.
So if I speak at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm a hungry,
you're hungry.
Dude.
Yep.
Yeah, when Ruben told me that I was going to start speaking, I was really nervous.
Yeah,
you
didn't ask to speak.
Oh, no. I was not like, hey, can I do that? Like, no, heck no. I'd never once was like, this is something I strive to do in my life. I had not thought about it. And Ruben was like, so we're thinking about having you speak. And I was like, me? No, that's so funny. Like,
oh, no, you're serious? Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Is
so
there
once
a camera?
Once it actually came time to where it was serious and he was like, you actually need to start planning and like, you know, making a presentation. I was like, oh, God, I can't get out of this. Like, it's set in stone now. I got to start working on it. I wanted to back out probably up until yesterday. I was like,
oh,
your kid's too late.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. What was I thinking?
My thing is looking for a positive COVID test. You get out of it real quick.
Yeah. I get up at 1 a.m. and I don't go back to sleep. I just stress.
Yeah, that
was
me.
All night long, I cannot sleep. And then finally it's over and I'm like, oh. Thank God, but yeah.
And then someone asks you to do it again, you're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and then the same damn thing happens the next time.
We never learn.
Nope.
I hadn't actually done any public speaking since my high school graduation.
I was the same way until I started with Pre.
It was not really for me. I was like, man, I don't know if I can do that.
Were
and
you
then,
like the salutatorian? Or how do you say that?
Valedictorian.
No, I wasn't.
Nobody
but
knows.
I was.
You can say yes.
I was nominated by the class.
So you had to get up.
So I had to. Yeah. It was another thing that they were just like, "Hey, you want to do this? You're going to do it, right?" And I was like,
"No."
Yes, I guess I am.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, it happened, and I was like, you know what? If I can do this in high school, I can do it now. Like, what am I freaking out about? You know.
Less judgy people here than it is in high
for
school.
For sure.
Oh yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Awesome. Amber,
thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I love you guys. I listen to your podcast all the time.
Shout out.
Appreciate it.
Aw, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And we'll see you next time you're on stage.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Man. Okay. I'll be there. Yes. Woo!
Thanks. Uh-oh. They don't have name tags. Oh.
Well, how about we let them? You want to introduce your
husband
and yourself?
Yeah, so Judy Fishman brought over two people that are legends.
Are rock stars, I believe, is what she said.
In the industry, and they're also not wearing name tags, and we all know how great I am with names.
Touché.
So please introduce yourselves.
I'm Ardith Berger.
Ardith Berger.
And I'm Robert Berger.
Robert Berger.
Robert Berger.
So,
thank you.
Who wants to give us the history of
give the little history of the history. So Judy came over and said that you guys have been in the industry forever, and you're innovators, and you were like the first to do so many things that we had to talk to you. And then you guys went to lunch and gratefully came back. So,
okay,
basically, your story.
Well, Robert and I are the founders of Belle de St. Clair.
Boom. That's a word. Do you even know that?
No.
Belle de St. Clair. I remember that.
Right. We started Belle de St. Clair in 1969 with the first products, which were some instruments to pack porcelain.
So this was a supply company? Or
so was it just a brainchild when you say Belle de St. Clair?
It was a brainchild of Robert's. He developed these little instruments that helped them pack porcelain.
So you were a ceramist?
It was a ceramist.
Thank
and
you.
We went to the very first seminar, which was held at the St. Francis Hotel, March 15th, 1969.
Could you be more specific?
J.F. Jelenko.
J.F.
Jelenko.
Yep.
It was their Golden West Seminar 1, wow. And we showed these first little instruments that Robert had played around and designed with. And lo and behold, people wanted to buy them. And
right there, I bet, right?
Right there. And we sold 33 sets of them and had no idea how we were ever going to make those things. But we went back, and that put us into business. And
how did
started.
You make them originally? How did you create them
They were made out of single-edged razor blades. And the pattern was cut out of the razor blade. And then it was thinned out, and it was put in a wood handle. Right.
I remember my dad had one of those.
So did you, like, make these for yourself?
Yes.
To cut between
and
an approximal,
and then
right?
You were like, well, this makes sense.
We went to the seminar to do one of the first demonstrations on sculpturing porcelain.
Yeah.
And we had a little table about like this size. And we had 135 people watching. They were standing on other tables.
135
at
people
that time,
looking
that's
at a table.
Because at that time, no one did any table clinics.
Really?
Right. It was my secret.
It's not like that anymore. That's for sure.
No. And in the lab I was working in, which was called Shramadent, owned by Gene Greenstein, only you got to be over 80
to know him.
To know him. But he was a master ceramist and even mixed his own porcelain at that time. And I would sit on the other side of the bench and watch him. And when he saw me watching, he took all the case pans and put them together so I couldn't see through
the
wall.
Yeah.
Secretive.
It's what it was, yeah. Very secretive. So met with such popularity because nobody was doing it. We were the first ones that were actually demonstrating porcelain. So now when you come to a meeting like LMT, you see every other booth, people are doing demonstrations. So that was probably the first thing we brought to the industry, was to open it up.
Right.
And so then, after you got your 33 orders, now you have to come up with a company, and how did you take it from there?
Well,
you had to go out and buy 33 razor blades.
No. Actually.
They were handmade. That's
first,
right.
The
really?
First instruments that went out actually were handmade, but because we had to get them. But then we progressed along that. We went into doing aluminum handles and having them turned.
Well, don't forget about Poppy.
And what happened is that my grandfather at the time ran the first semiconductor division of Hughes Aircraft. And that's where we were able to get some
material.
Oh, we were able, the right people. Yeah.
We were able to meet some people that were able to help us through his contacts, because at that time they were the only semiconductor division. And so he had some friends, and he had a little company that had a turning machine, screw turning machine, yeah. and he did the handles for us. And then we, Robert researched the types of materials for the blades, and then we bought it and then found another company to stamp them out. And it became a process of everybody trying to help us along the way of little things that we did. And I can remember the first time we had a delivery of boxes, which they were first shipped out in first boxes. They were delivered to our garage, and I thought, oh, my God, we'll never get rid of all these boxes. It filled up our whole garage. And anyway.
And you did.
We did. And then we progressed from porcelain. We progressed over to waxing because although Robert was a master ceramist at this point, it still didn't matter how good the porcelain was. If it didn't fit, it was a remake. So hence, then he went over into the other section of the laboratory, and that's when we started doing electronic equipment. And we were a small company. We had 43 employees, but we had a full-time engineer and a full-time production department, and we also had a tool and die department. So everything was made in-house and completely assembled and made by us. But that was one of the things we wanted to do. Yeah. And so he developed the products. He's the one that has the patents and developed all these different products for the industry.
What were you doing with electronics? I'm confused.
Okay. Well, because everybody was doing their wax patterns using Bunsen burners.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of disadvantages to the Bunsen burner. It burns up the wax in the first place. And it's inconvenient and hot. And
you developed the first electric waxer?
That's what I was
Correct.
Thinking. That's what I thought we were going. That's great.
Yeah, the very first electronic waxer, which was called a Micromatic.
Like that idea wasn't even around until you came.
No.
Well, that was in the 70s, right?
That's
Early
correct.
70s.
Well, how did you get the idea? From soldering or, I mean...
Yeah, how do you develop something?
Or did you
like
just
that?
Like, I'm tired of this big open flame in front
exactly.
of me all day.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. I'm hot.
Yeah.
And what he wanted to do was be able to control it. And the idea was to have a linear rise, which it did from 90 degrees to 670 in 1 degree increments. So you were able then to take the wax and figure out how it formed droplets, and some wax did it at heated at different temperatures.
Different types of waxes.
Lower temperatures, higher temperatures.
Okay.
And then he was able to actually put the wax where he wanted it rather than having it flow all over the place because it was hot.
Huh.
That's amazing.
That's great. So you just kept messing with the temperature until you find the sweet spot?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And
yeah.
we were able to, then we developed, we had waxes that went along with the temperature. So we were able to say, if you use our blockout wax, it went at this temperature. If you use our this at different temperatures. And then, so then from there, we have electronic waxers. Then we went into dipping copings, electronic, where you dip the coping. We developed that.
And that was the first one in the United States.
The first one in the U.S.
I saw them dipping wax patterns, making them from dip wax in Germany when I was, about?
In the 70s.
24. And I went myself on an airplane over to, actually the meeting was in Dusseldorf.
Right.
In the middle of Bavaria. And I couldn't get a room. It was such a big meeting. I couldn't get a room near the convention center. So I stayed in Cologne and rode the train in the morning to the exhibit center and stayed around all day and looked at everything. And my mouth was just dropping open.
I bet.
So I went by one booth, a company called Schuler, and fell in love with them because everything they had was made by technicians. They actually had a large laboratory in Germany, and they were doing this little dip method in a temperature-controlled heating pot. And so I purchased from them the components to make the heating pot and had them shipped back to us at our little laboratory.
Yeah.
And then I changed the design so that we could use components made in the U.S. because theirs were 220 volt.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that wouldn't be convenient for a laboratory.
Oh, couldn't use it.
And we made the little dipping pod, and then that became part of our demonstrations also. Mm-hmm. We showed people how to make these copings by the dipping method, and we developed the wax for it. I didn't care for the German wax too much. They'd make a coping, and then they'd cut around the margin, and then they'd re-marginize.
And it would shrink, pull up, maybe?
Exactly, yep. Re-marginize to get a margin, and we were able to develop a wax that would do both, so that we could make the coping and the margin at the same time. It would adapt that closely to
the... So was that a temperature, or was that a whatever you put into the wax to make that happen, or a
yes.
little bit of both? So you
both.
Had to figure out what to add to it to make it stick right. and not pull up, as well as the heat?
Yes, and I went to a wax manufacturer located 25, 30 miles from our laboratory, and asked him if he could make a special wax for us, and I showed him what I wanted to do, and he made a little sample, and 19 formulas later,
I bet we remembers that number.
It's a little harder than a candle.
Well, yeah. he'd make me a little sample, 5 pounds. Which is enough for a lab for 2 years.
Yep.
And I'd go back to the laboratory and I'd put it in the little pot and melt it down and make a bunch of copings and see how it worked, if it could be carved. And we did this 19 times until we finally came up with just the beautiful formula.
Got it.
And it worked pretty much for everybody. We demonstrated that for a long time. And one thing I remember that was kind of cute, Ardith and I always worked our little exhibit booths together. And so she couldn't do the porcelain work. So I demonstrated the porcelain work, and she learned how to make these little dip copings. And
nice.
We would make them on 5 times normal size die so that the people could actually see what...
Wow.
What was being made, and she would carve the margin with her thumbnail.
Been there, done that. I bet it worked really well too, didn't it? Hey, when in Rome, improvise.
Yeah. So she was the dipping girl.
That's great.
That made all of the copings.
Yeah. So basically, we just kind of every time we had an exhibit, and we did about 18 trade shows a year. And
wow.
That's a lot.
We did a lot.
And look on your face.
Yes. And we did a lot of trade shows, and we demonstrated at every meeting that there was. We always brought out a full display of everything. We always had models to wax. We always had things for them to play with. Always a demonstration, always a unit in front of the customer that he could play with it and do whatever he wanted to also.
That's how we are.
So, it made it very important, and they could understand what we were trying to teach. And our attitude was that we were really there to teach. We were in the manufacturer. We really didn't care if you bought it from us or not. If we taught you something and you went and bought it from somebody else, that's fine too.
And
we
I
didn't
bet you
really
that
care.
Made you sell more, because that's the best sales you can do is through education.
Well, I'm a former school teacher. And I taught foods and clothing, so I'm a demonstrate, learned my whole life to demonstrate. So he just kind of went along with what I did, and I said, you got to show them. You have to do it. And so they could see that what the steps were, and that's always the most important thing, is the following the steps along, because sometimes you can start with something, but you don't get that finished product. You're missing something along
this
the
way.
You're missing something along the center, and so that's what we really planned to do. And they would come to the booth just to see what we were doing and what we had new, And we ended up with almost 500 products.
Wow.
And
21 patents.
21 patents.
Jeez.
Robert has 21 patents.
21.
And we sold the company to Kerr in 1996. Actually, 1995, November 5th, 1995.
Yeah.
And we closed the facility in 1996, and where we were doing manufacturing, because we had a large 25,000 square foot facility.
And by that time, yeah.
Yes, we did. And since we actually manufactured everything from start to finish, including all the packaging.
Oh, Judy said it was beautiful and black, and it looked like Gucci packaging.
We believed in shrink wrapping everything, so everything had a nice film around it, which really saved us at the 94 earthquake because we were on the epicenter. And when the building went down, it was a tilt-up building because that's what they all are, and the walls went out and the roof came down. Well, when it broke through in the center of the building and all the water came through the building, we didn't have to worry. All our products were all okay.
Shrink-wrapped and
they were all shrink-backed. They all saved.
Wow.
Everything was absolutely perfect by the time we got into the building to see it. There wasn't much left of the building, but our products
that
were
all
saved.
That was in 94.
Yes.
And then 1 year later, you're like, I'm selling this place.
After the roof.
Actually, it's a funny story because Kerr, over the years, had actually come to us four different times.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Trying to buy you.
Trying to buy us.
Yep.
And the last time they finally came, Jeff Rowe was in charge of it at the time, and he called, and Robert said, I'm not going to take that phone call. And he said, you talk to him this time. And I said, okay. I said, but I have to tell him, what do you want for the company? He said, oh, he throws out a figure at me. And I walked back to my desk in my office, and I said, sheepishly, I said, Jeff, let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you all my books of original entry, all of my tax returns, everything I possibly can for the last 3 years. And you take it to your staff and let them go through our records and see what they see in our business. And if they like it, they can think about it and come back. If they don't, send me back everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what Robert wants, by the way. And 6 weeks later, we got a letter of intent. It was actually everything that we had asked for.
Wow.
But it was, and when we actually signed the papers, the head of Cybron Corporation, who owned Kerr, said that in the more than 30 years that we owned the business, he said they could never have developed the product line that we did engineering that we had put into our products over those years, because he said you could do it because you were individuals and because you had nobody standing over you saying, no, you can't make that.
They didn't have the board of directors to sell you whatnot.
You couldn't make that. And so he said to our engineer, he said, how do you decide what you're going to make for your new products? And he always says, ask Robert. Because Robert was always the technician, so he knew what to make for the industry and what was needed at the time. Whereas, and that's how it came about. And, of course, Robert has a few other things, which I'll tout for him because he'll never tell you that. He's the first technician ever to be president of a dental organization.
Ever?
Which one?
He was president of the American Academy of Aesthetic Dentistry.
I'm an AAC accredited ceramist.
Yes.
So I'm feeling
you. First
good job.
Technician to be president of the AACD?
No, it wasn't. It was
the American Academy of Aesthetic Dentistry.
Aesthetic. A-A-E-D.
A-A-E-D.
Which is very similar.
This industry and its acronyms.
Wow, that's, right. And that was a doctor's.
That was all.
That was all.
You were a technician. That was.
He was the first tech. He was the first technician ever to be taken into the organization.
Yes.
And it took us 14 years to work our way up the ladder to become president. And he became president, the first president. And
that's huge.
And the first person to be taken into the as a dental technician to be recognized by a dental organization.
Yes, that's huge.
Wow.
That really is
so
amazing. Wow.
So and he's done a lot of lecturing, needless to say.
There were a lot of great dentists in that organization.
Yes.
Definitely the tops in the world.
At the time, there was R. Sheldon Stein, Jack Preston, Lloyd Miller.
David Garber.
I know that name.
Yes.
David Gardner. I know
Goldstein.
That
a big group, and they had started the organization, and Robert attended absolutely every meeting that there was ever held.
So during this whole time you ran this company, did you also still have a lab?
Sounded like you're still a technician, right?
Yes.
You're still
We had a technician. We had two technicians. We had a full laboratory.
Okay.
We stopped doing commercial work on a commercial basis in 1981. Because it wasn't fair. He was traveling.
Sure.
And he couldn't do everything.
Couldn't
keep up with the work at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's the reason. So although we still had technicians doing the work, so we would get the cases and we would do them in the lab as samples. So everything we put out at the shows were all actual cases, but we hadn't done them.
Okay. Yeah, I see. Yeah.
For professional people.
Yep.
So that's how we really started.
So after you sold, did you stay at the bench?
For a couple two of years, couple of years.
A couple of more years after that.
So, but, I mean, it's 25 some odd years later, and you're still coming to the LMT today. So you're still involved, and you're still engaged after all that time.
We have a daughter that's a dentist.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Okay.
You didn't scare her out, huh?
No, we didn't. Yep. And one is a pediatrician, and one is a dentist. But they didn't get scared, and we would do the Chicago Midwinter Dental Meeting. Our daughter was in medical school in Michigan, so we would bring her over and she'd sit there, and she'd be studying, and they'd say, you have to wait for my mother over there.
I'm a doctor. I don't know what this is.
I don't know what you're talking about. So we've had some fun experiences over the years. I will say one thing, that we had a great group of people that worked with us. And I always said that we would not have been the company we were without all of the people that worked with us.
Oh, yeah.
Because we could go to every show and sell everything that we wanted to, and people could buy it. But if we didn't didn't come back to the facility and they didn't make it for us and care about what they were making, then it wouldn't have been a successful business. And employee number one that we hired was with us when we sold the company. 30 years later.
Wow.
All of our employees had been with us for many, many years. And they had as much devotion to creating the product line as we did. And I think that's really one of the most important things about what we had to do.
So the original tools with the razor blade, do they still exist?
Oh, they sure do.
Yeah.
Who do you get them through nowadays?
Oh, our products are all sold through all of the lab
dealers,
supply companies.
Yeah.
All the lab supply companies. And I think they've kind of dropped the name of Velda St. Clair.
I love that name. How'd you come up with that name?
How did we come up with that name?
Sorry, I'm just changing directions. But
okay. that goes to Robert and the starter, the gentleman that helped us with, who was at the time with J.F. Jelenko.
Okay.
Which started the Golden West Seminar 1, which is where we went to. And he said, don't name the instruments after yourself. Everybody's got an instrument that at the time it was Laufenaer carvers, you know. Anyway, he said, no. So he said, and since we were doing porcelain, he said, well, relate it something to that. So we came up with Bell being the beautiful of, and St. Clair was a town outside of Paris that was known for their porcelain cloisonne, and so it became the beautiful of St. Clair.
Love that.
Not the burger carver.
No, not the burger carver. No, it wasn't. It was not related to anything.
I always liked that name, though. I can remember way back. I just love that name, and I didn't remember when Kerr bought that, but I always remember my dad had Belle de St. Clair, pretty much everything at that time. Yeah.
Well, because for waxing and the type that that was the period of the industry. Now you don't see as much of that because we've gone some more into electronics. But as we say, you don't see any Bunsen burners either. So everything evolves with time. And that was perfect for the time and the era. And now we have moved on as I've walked around the show and see they've moved on.
So you're still just like coming and checking everything out and look just at seeing what's going on.
Oh, it's still fun. I've always had a fascination for teeth. I always said that they were very sexy.
Yep. I love that. That's great, though.
Plus, you're rock stars. People come up and say hello to you while we're just sitting here.
I know. And Judy loves you.
Well, she's the reason that we came up today.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to see Judy. And you know, there's very few of us left in this industry. Most of us have retired.
Jerry Mariacher coined a nice word.
Cal Lab. I love that guy.
Right. He said we're all Labosauruses now.
Labosaurus.
Yep. We're Labosauruses.
He's a good dude.
That's what he calls us now. So, and we still stay in contact with a lot of lab people. Yeah. So,
And you always will. I bet. I mean,
we will.
Why not? We're amazing.
We are.
Well, thank you so much for
sitting down with us and coming back. What a great story.
I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you for everything you've done, sir. Yes. I mean, who knows where we would be now if we didn't have electric waxers.
Exactly. Boom.
Well,
thank you very much. I just needed something that would work for me.
And then you shared it with the world.
Well, in order to make it, nobody will make one. Yeah. They have to make 100. So then what am I going to do with the other 99? Well, I better go sell them.
Smart.
I love it.
It's true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
So.
But it was really for me.
It was. And he did so much lecturing and so much traveling that we've kind of just taken the time off and just been at home because
it's a lot.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
It is a lot. And I'm glad that the industry is so progressive now because you can really definitely see what computer technology has done. And I think in the long run it's going to make it easier and maybe we'll get some more technicians coming into the industry because we need technicians.
Oh, yeah. We need an infusion big time.
Yes, we do. And maybe not being so tedious as it was in our era will help bring this industry
up. The hands-eye coordination is not nearly as important digitally.
Right.
You know, it's I don't want to say it's less talent.
Well, different.
It's a different talent.
It's a different, and that's good to see because I think as people get older, they're all going to need teeth, and
that's what my dad always said. He said people will always need teeth,
right?
So it's just a great
and
industry.
I can see this.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be that way,
yep.
And if we can infuse more younger people into this industry, it will definitely help.
Awesome.
Thank you
so much. We appreciate both
of
you.
That was great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you too. Thank you very much.
A huge thanks to Amber, Robert, and Ardith for sitting down with us at Lab Day West. I tell you, it's amazing to hear how much Amber has learned about implants just by helping others with their implant questions. Plus, a major high five to her for having to work with Elvis and still be willing to sit down and talk to us. I couldn't imagine having to work with you. Actually, I can, because for 5 years we've been working together, so I can imagine that. You're pretty cool. And a big thanks to Robert and Ardith for all that you guys have done to move our industry in the right direction by improving the techniques and the tools that we use. It's amazing to think with today's technology that there was a day when the wax carver was high tech. But you know what? You got to start somewhere. Thank you all.
We appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
Yeah.
Bye. Are you in the hall right now?
Well, I mean, I'm right by the elevators.